This podcast was made possible by an anonymous Irvingtonian and by our primary sponsor, Artisan Realtors, your Irvington real estate source.
Welcome to another edition of Firehouse Irvington. We are pleased to be invited into the very wonderful confines of the Blackacre Brew Pub. And this is once again another utilization of this wonderful historic block. We talked on a recent podcast to the DeFore's sisters, who famously ran the DeFore's restaurant. I have talked to more than one person since we did that podcast about the fact that DeFore's was one of those dining experiences, much like the Ayers Tea Room, and even if you could put certain restaurants like St. Elmo's and eating at Shapiro's Deli, there's just certain spots in Indy that you must eat at, and it was a delight to have the DeFore's sisters on, and you should check out that podcast. I'm being joined today by Kevin Freely. Kevin is the guy that he always has to work in the engine room. He does it with a big smile on his face. He's our technical guy and our absolute direct link to Irvington. Kevin is a resident of Irvington, and both he and I have always enjoyed this part of town, so we decided to do Firehouse Irvington. Kind of a reminder that Firehouse Irvington, it came out of our concept that nowadays with media, you do very little local of anything. Everyone tries to find the broadest audience. Even if you're on Facebook, it's like, I must have 5,000 followers and 60,000 likes on all of my proclamations. Well, local is sort of what this is all about. And the reason why it's called Firehouse Irvington is we thought to ourselves, Kevin, what if there was a little tiny firehouse in every little burg in Indiana? And there was a little radio station in there, and they could do nothing but local content. They would actually be that radio station for that community. Of interest, and I was just looking this up the other day, that happened in much of America through the late 70s. There was a radio station for all the outlying areas of central Indiana. There was a radio station for Shelbyville. There was a radio station for Anderson. There's a radio station for Plainfield, Indiana. But what happens is, with Indianapolis becoming the large city that it was, all these radio stations, I'd use the word co-opted, they were bought by big corporations, and all of a sudden, instead of hearing about Plainfield sports or Plainfield content, now it's today's top hits from Indianapolis.
Right.
You know, so right. And so you've seen this, too, as we have grown up in this area. But, Kevin, I know you've always been around guys that were involved in radio, so that was kind of an easy leap for us to make to do Firehouse Irvington, because we tried to think in terms of radio.
Right. I've had a number of friends in the radio business, and I, of course, I have a radio face as well, so, you know, I've been on stage, but most people have encouraged me to maybe, you know, switch over to the radio side of things, so.
It was funny. I was really busy leading up to that DeFore's interview, and you were at a social event, and you told some people, you go, I just couldn't get over Jay. You know, he just looked like he was ready to take a nap. And next thing I know, I flip on the mics and he's doing a podcast. So it's that weird thing of, like you just said, a radio face. It's odd what certain areas we have training for. Who knows why? You know, when I see elementary school teachers at work, I think, how could you have that much enthusiasm, that much energy, and then that much tolerance?
Right.
Because after little Jimmy put his crayon up his nose, I'd be like, we're out of here. Thank you. Good night.
By the way, I was that child that put the crayon, usually sure. One in each. I actually, over at School 77, there's an Irvington story for you. At School 77, I famously got shamed by my teacher. We were, you remember they had the little tootle flutes, those little...
Recorder.
Recorders, exactly. Yeah. And I famously played Mary Had a Little Lamb through my nose, and I was shamed in front of the entire class for doing that. It's School 77, and I think there is actually still a plaque up there that asks that I not be allowed to enter the building.
So, they still say, yeah, that was just a little too much.
Yeah.
they used nostril power here, and that was it. And I think it was mostly because kids had to share those recorders. So later, it's one thing if it's like you might have to rinse it off. It's quite another thing you have to run it through the school dishwasher.
I guess this one had something on it.
Yeah. So that, I think that was part of it. But you know, it was interesting to do this podcast because you and I's discussion at a certain point was, it's a really great idea. We should just jump in and do it. And did it surprise you how many guests and how much local interest we generated kind of from the beginning?
Right. Yeah, it really did. I think we kicked into gear a lot faster than we even thought we would. And we've got a lot of folks talking about the podcast. I don't know if we've got anybody listening. I'm afraid to look at the statistics because I don't want to get depressed. But a lot of folks will talk about it. So I'm hoping that that is translating into folks listening. I do know we have listeners in California and you know, former Irvingtonians who were listening to us and are very happy, and I do get comments. But I was very excited about, and when we asked people to be on, very few have said, oh, I don't know. Everybody's
had a couple. In fact, sometimes they'll have some interesting reservations, like something you wouldn't imagine. Won't mention any names, right. But I remember trying to get one person on, and they said, look, I run a local business. I'll be concerned. I'll say something, and then people will be bothered or offended by what I said. And I remember chatting with this person and saying, this is about as far away from politics as possible.
Right.
We're not going to talk about city anything. We're just going to talk about what you make, why you like Irvington. And of course, usually around Irvington, what is the name of your ghost?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, it's like the Harry Potter series. Everybody's got their own,
you have your own spirit animal, or whatever. Your spirit animal or your owl. Right, yeah. Right. So it's exactly like that. So
there's my spirit animal just arrived here at Blackacre.
So it's fun to be here at Blackacre. And of course, you know, some people will be filtering in. So you'll hear the realistic sounds of a brew pub. And the Blackacre is another example of what we've seen. As I grew up on the east side of town and my family was from Irvington, I always had such a fond, warm feeling. It was formerly the feed store, then it became a hobby shop, and it's a building just up the road, a piece on Washington Street. And I think it was something Steel Hobbies or something like that.
Oh, I think you're right. I used to go over there. Oh, what was his name? Was right next to Linder's Ice Cream.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, this is the kind of community where kids in our age group, and I understand, you know, we're getting a little older now, but we still represent what America was. And, you know, I know that holding on to it too tight is unrealistic, but remembering the values and the fun and the atmosphere it generated, I think, are positive values. Because as kids, we love that hobby store. That's the first place you ever... You learn about balsa wood models.
Oh, yeah.
You mean it? You have a rubber band and it'll fly? Absolutely. Come over here and you build it yourself. You know, so there were so many great things. Our parents, of course, loved this area. They went to school here, and there was always something about Irvington. So it's kind of cool to see a spot like the Blackacre, which could have just been empty space in a building that might eventually just get bulldozed.
And this whole strip here was partially empty for a long period of time, and really was kind of a blight on the area. And then, of course, then the DeForest came in and took a chance. And as they said, Jack and Jill with the antiques. In fact, there was a period of time there where antiques were a big thing all over the state. And Jack and Jill had the foresight to come in here and actually open several antique stores or encourage several antique stores. And that got interest, at least in this strip. Then with the DeForest opening somewhere to eat, we suddenly became a destination. Irvington wasn't a place you passed by as quickly as possible. You stopped, and that was an important change.
It is interesting, too, because if you look at the city of Indianapolis, and many of the people that listen to this podcast are well aware of it, but the basic overview is the city of Indianapolis, very traditional. You know, now there's so much talk about transportation, you know, with can we do light rail? We're going to have the Red Line bus line, which some people like, some people don't. But we're always trying to look at some public transportation wrinkles. Indianapolis, through probably the 20s and 30s, ultra traditional. There were streetcar lines that ran from a variety of places throughout the city. Initially horse-drawn. Of course, that's quite a mess, literally and figuratively, because you have to house large animals and clean up after them as well. But it was a situation where very traditional. You lived close to where you worked. Many people did. The automobile was not the ubiquitous thing that we all see it as now. So Indianapolis was that very type of traditional cities. The old neighborhoods that are within 2 miles of downtown Indianapolis are just great treasures. As the population started to expand outwards in the 40s and 50s, the suburbs of Indianapolis were born. Well, Irvington kind of got bypassed in that. We have had other shows where we've discussed the fact that there were tremendous employment opportunities here, International Harvester, just to the south of us. Even when the Ford plant came online, there were jobs.
Right.
People worked here, flourishing businesses. So people could easily own a home in Irvington and walk to work.
The other big one was Naval Avionics, right?
Yes.
Up there, just north of Irvington, but a lot of folks that lived in Irvington were Naval. And during my time at Howe, another big employer really was the church, the Disciples of Christ Church, had their national offices
okay.
over there in the old Butler building. And that was a huge number of the students at Howe had parents that worked for that.
Absolutely.
That
and, you know, there's even the Shadeland corridor where Western Electric was, and I believe the Chrysler Corporation had a large transmission plant along there, et cetera. Eastgate Shopping Center employed a lot of people. So, you know, we had this, there were plenty of reasons to be in Irvington. But as the suburbs expand, parts of this closed up, if you will. People moved out. And thank goodness somebody had the foresight to make this a historical district, which does have certain challenges. But overall, it's helped preserve an area that people can move back into and enjoy the flavor of what Irvington was originally designed for.
Right. I've gone back and forth on that historic district because whenever it restricts me from doing something, when I do, I grumble and kick my feet around. But I realize in talking to people like Dale Harkins over at the Irving Theater, who was heavily involved at, and of course our own Don Briggs, talking about the values of that historic designation, and then I realize that it really is important.
The pluses far outweigh the minuses.
Yeah. I can't paint my house, purple. It would really bothers me because I've really wanted a purple
sure.
house forever. But I can live with that if I can
absolutely.
Get the other
purple is pretty much America's number one exterior paint color for houses.
And you got that information from the Pittsburgh Paint and Glass.
There's
some
company. Institute that compiles these statistics. You know, most people were going to say tan, but no, tan doesn't come close to the number of purple homes in the area. Yes, thank goodness there is a historical commission that does not allow Kevin to paint his home purple. You remember one of the footnotes from one of our previous episodes was we had Ken Magar on, and he talked about the fact as an attorney, they bought a historical home. They met the family when... they had either had it painted before somebody said something to them or somebody came to them later and said, our records show that your home must be white. And they had painted it kind of a creamy yellow.
Right.
And it absolutely is a gorgeous color. You know, I'm all for historical authenticity. And maybe, who knows, maybe it was white at one point.
Right.
But Ken actually was able to mount, as only an attorney can.
Right.
Cohesive argument is, well, light cream. But it is nice to see at least there are checks and balances
yeah.
to at least attempt to keep things in a historical fashion.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
So when we started doing this podcast, you know, some of the things that I absolutely wanted to learn more about and I thought would be interesting stories for anybody who was listening to a podcast about Irvington is, you know, I really wanted to explore a little bit about why is Irvington considered kind of a haunted place? You know, Halloween takes on very big importance here. The Irvington ghost tours are regionally famous, led by Alan Hunter. And
well, we need to get some of the folks from the Irvington Historical Society on to talk to us because I've always wondered, is it haunted because it's named Irvington after Washington Irving, or was, you know, did they name it Irvington because it was already haunted? I mean, which came first? You know,
well, absolutely. And the other thing about this, too, having a discussion with Marilyn Isaacs, who was with us not too long ago, you know, I discussed with her about there has been, and these are theories, and, you know, we live in a world where, you know, people roll their eyes when they hear about, you know, conspiracy theories. But there is a theory about ley lines and energy, and somehow Irvington, was it coincidental, was it on purpose, seems to be built on an energy center that tends to, at least, if nothing else, pique the imagination. You know, Kevin, from being a longtime resident here, on a kind of chilly October evening, and you're just kind of taking a little walk, there's something about the energy of Irvington that at least ignites part of the imagination.
My daughter Colleen and I had one of the most interesting evenings. Gosh, it's been almost... It's back when Alan Hunter first started doing his walking tours, and we took one of the walking tours, and it was a cool evening. The clouds were moving very quickly. It was a full moon, and the whole experience, I mean, Alan's fabulous as it is, but that whole experience was exciting, and you just look up, and you'd see the clouds moving across this full moon, and there was a sound in the wind, and I mean, it was, you knew you were
absolutely
in a haunted place.
And we've always heard, and perhaps it's even been quantified by science, that suggestibility probably plays heavily into this. Because remember, when we were kids, it was like, well, you know that house over there? It's haunted.
And blue lights and everything.
Yeah, and if somebody said that if you could spend the night, they'll give you $25 because no one's been able to survive the night. Well, as a kid, you know, you'd hear that stuff. And then you just mentioned the House of Blue Lights, and I've worked for a million years at WFBQ Radio in Indianapolis. They're literally across the street from the site of the House of Blue Lights.
Yeah.
And we did two or three or four big investigative pieces on that about the true nature and what it was all about. And it was the Skiles Test residence.
Right, right.
But what happened was, there were just more and more legends, and the legends built on each other. So he had built an elaborate house that was covered in white tile and had blue lights on it. Well, then, you know, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's really hard to picture Indianapolis in the late 40s, what that neighborhood looked like.
Right.
Obviously, the legends grow. Kids are like, he's up there, and he's got his wife, and she's in a glass casket, and you look in the front window, and there she is. So, you know, it's that suggestibility thing.
CJ, we're missing our moneymaker right here. You know, Sarah Koenig has already proven that those research podcasts are the ones that make the money for people, see? So we need to be doing one on that whole House of Blue Lights
and investigate that,
figure out what was going on
there. Well, true crime is certainly, you know, it's a genre nowadays, and... It was fun doing the investigative pieces. There's a couple of books, and then there are still some Skiles Test family members that are around. There wasn't really anything much nefarious going on. You know, Skiles was sort of an early, I guess you'd call him preppers. He was kind of preparing for, you know, possible what would happen if America were involved in a big nuclear war or something of that nature. So he had a lot of food stockpiled.
Did he have an underground bunker of any kind?
He did have some underground tunnels, one of which exited out the back of his property, but I think you have to almost chalk it up to eccentricity and then just the fact that you're living out in the middle of nowhere, and then it's filling kids' minds.
But it's the times, too. I still remember in grade school, you know, learning the thing where you had to bend down and get under your desk because there was going to be a nuclear explosion.
Right.
And even as a fourth grader, I remember looking at the kids next to me and going, you realize if this is a nuclear explosion, being under a desk is going to do nothing except give us, you know, give them something to put our bodies in when they come to collect us.
See, Kevin, that's where you're so wrong, because that wooden desk, that flimsy wooden desk, was considered a primary shield against any type of nuclear or anything.
It was the same thing as sitting in the hallway and putting your head between your knees. Yeah. If there was a tornado coming, I thought, really? When that ceiling falls, my head between my knees is only going to do dirty things.
Listen, if they had those wooden desks at Chernobyl, the Russians they'd be thanking us about now. But yeah, so once again, it's the possibility that, you know, that thought is put into your mind that, you know, that Irvington is a more active place, a little more haunted place. And that's why I always love Alan Hunter, because Alan will present things on these ghost tours, but he himself is naturally a little bit skeptical about things. He's a historian. He likes to check things out. But he is also a firm believer of primary experience. And then Alan presented me with something that I had never thought about too much prior to that. He was very big on the actual anniversaries of things. So let's say you were greatly touched by, I'm just the Titanic disaster. Mm-hmm. Alan would be the kind of historian that would want to stand, I think it was Pier 54 in New York, where the Titanic was supposed to arrive. He'd be the guy that would stand there on the hour, minute, and day,
yep,
the anniversary of the Titanic sinking, to feel the sensation and vibration of that moment at that historic site.
Well, going back to a little bit to my earlier comment about whether Irvington was named Irvington because it was already haunted, or whether it, or the hauntings came because we named ourselves Irvington. The other piece of that is, I still want to know, did the 666 Masonic Lodge get put here because Irvington was haunted, or is that what's causing it to be haunted? I mean, again, which came first?
And it's wonderful serendipity, and as you know, speaking of that Masonic Lodge, it speaks of an era when we built these elaborate structures for Masonic organizations, and there always is that mystery about the Masons. And in fact, on Netflix, one of the more popular programs on Netflix is, yep, you know, insider information about the Freemasons. People are fascinated by that. And you and I had a mutual friend who has since passed, who was very involved in the Freemasons.
He, in fact, introduced us. I mean, that's how I got to know you, was through Reed Miller.
Right.
So, yeah, he was a Mason. But
so you always wonder, you know, and it's like everything under the sun. It's like, is there something there? Isn't there something there? And as you said, what always came first, you know, the chicken or the egg? Do you have Lodge 666, which is a very superstitious number for many Americans?
And everything I've read about the Masons, I would have thought they would have got to that number and gone, oh, no. Because, I mean, they're into that whole and I would have thought they would have said, no, we're skipping to 667.
And there's people that build hotels and office buildings that excluded floor
13. Exactly.
Because, once again, we are a superstitious lot. And then, like, as you said, did somebody gleefully get the 665 and go, the next one, that's going in Irvington. That's the 666 one.
They're haunted.
Yeah, they're already haunted. They'll love it. No, I'm with you. So absolutely, I think the serendipity of certainly the spirit world in Irvington, I've always thought that this was such a great area in that I love architectural history, and that many of the structures were preserved. That's a very good thing for any part of the world, and something that we are lacking nowadays. And as you said about the Irvington Historical Society, it does speak of a bygone era. My father and his brother lived here in Irvington. You know, my uncle was a counselor out at the summer camp on Camp Belzer, and they both went to Howe, and, you know, they absolutely loved this area. They grew up in a very traditional way on the east side of Indianapolis. And I think in that era, how interesting it must have been for them. Our generation is in awe of the amount of technology, if you will, that's entered our world.
Right.
I think their generation must have been in awe of, no, this city really is forming. And there is this building of the world, because, you know, post-World War II, America went through tremendous growth.
Right.
You know, there were so many returning servicemen. There was finally money in the economy. So things were starting to really bustle. That really is the growth of, you know, large manufacturing. We live in a state, the state of Indiana, where we were very reliant on manufacturing. And manufacturing meant, even if you weren't inclined towards higher education, you might be able to get a great job working at Western Electric making telephones.
Right, right.
So it really spoke of a different era. So I just wonder about and marvel about how it must have been for them, born late 30s, early 40s, to look at the world in this way. You know, the emerging technologies were there, but we didn't have the wonder of electronics that we have nowadays.
Right. And, you know, another thing about Irvington, you go back even further than that, before the manufacturing was such an important part of Irvington, this was an arts community when it first started, and it's coming back to it being an arts community again. If you think about some of the musicians that we have and some of the theater folks that we have here living in Irvington, and then just think of the centerpiece for Irvington, the Irving Theater with Dale Harkins over there. I just went and saw the 50th anniversary of Jethro Tull at that little tiny theater here in Irvington. I saw Martin Barr come in with his band. It didn't have Ian Anderson, but everybody else was from the band. I watched a classic rock show here in my neighborhood.
Right. You watch part of rock and roll history and royalty, right?
Yeah.
No, and I'm amazed. Obviously, well, we've talked about a little bit about what did you think about the show. Dale is a little reluctant to go on, but once you get Dale talking, it's pretty amazing because he really has been, you know, there's a word in our life called stewardship.
Right.
And stewardship would be like, what are you doing to promote and keep the things that are important around you? And especially if you inherit something. And in the situation in Dale's case where, you know, he becomes the owner of the Irving Theater, he, and without knowing more about him, he has that sense of, no, this is a part of the history of this community. I'm going to preserve and protect and enrich it in Absolutely. Any way that I can. And I think it was almost ambitious with an almost wrecked building to do the shows that he did, but he persevered and he did those shows. And as you said, you live within walking distance of being able to go down and see the original guitar player for Jethro Tull.
It's amazing. And you have to give Dale a lot of credit because it is not a moneymaker for him. He works his tail off. His family works his tail off. His wife is there. His kids are there. They work their tails off. And, I mean, they're not... I don't think he's losing money at this point, but he's certainly not making a killing there because he offers the facility for, you know, a small fee. And I've worked with him on a couple of shows. We brought my favorite musician, Carrie Newcomer, here. And just his willingness to work with us and make it happen. He cares about this community. And,
yeah,
and
he really
we're
going
to get him on. We may have to tie him to a street lamp and interview him that way because he's not one that wants to tout himself. But he's got such a story to tell. And
he's got such a story to tell about that building. And I think he has a very good handle. And that building almost is a, you know, what's the right word for it? It's an example. It's almost like a microcosm, if you will, of kind of what Irvington went through. You know, here's a great local theater. Kids love to come in and watch movies. Now kids aren't really coming in and watching movies as much. Now
right.
people are moving out of Irvington. Now we live in an era where different people own the theater and they don't really care. Then we went through I guess you'd use the word infamous now, but there was a time in our society across the board through the United States, 70s, it was like a lot of theaters got used as pornographic theaters.
Well, it's kind of like the old Shakespeare plays where the king was a reflection of the community. So when the king was not doing well, it was a reflection that the whole kingdom
right.
wasn't doing well. In a sense, this was our king. You could watch the way the neighborhood was changing based on the way the theater was. So it's actually a reflection of the whole...
It was a reflection of that. And then, of course... You know, famously and thankfully emerged from the other end of that era where it was like, you know, thank goodness, you know, showing pornographic movies at a movie theater, I guess you understand. But now when you reflect back on that, you go, boy, that was just a poor choice all across the board for even the people that did it.
Right, right.
And then it later fell into hands of people that wanted to turn it. You know, multiplexes are so big nowadays. You know, you go and you can see 16 screens of entertainment. So somebody thought, well, we'll just split the theater down the middle and show movies on each side. And that was not a good idea either.
No.
So Dale has gone through all that and has attempted to keep. And I would imagine if Dale hit the lottery tomorrow, he'd restore it to its original shape.
He's working on that. Everything he does is to try to get it back
right.
the way it was. And it's fun to hear. Martin Barr is an example. He apparently told Dale, this is a great theater. This is a great community. I'll come back. I mean, he didn't have a big crowd. I was very embarrassed in some ways that here we are looking at Martin Barr and Jethro Tull. We had 180 people maybe there.
Right.
It was kind of embarrassing, but he loved the audience. He says this, you know, these
the people that were there really enjoyed the show.
And he loved the venue. He said, this is cool the way you have not finished out the ceiling.
Absolutely.
It has a great sound and it's just got a great feel to it.
Yeah, so that's another great story about Irvington and another story that we want to tackle. So yeah, we need to delve more into what came first, the chicken or the egg, the 666 Lodge, or you know, the hauntings of Irvington. Now as we move forward, Kevin, what are some of the things I know we've talked about wanting to explore another great family of Indianapolis, the Hilton U. Brown family.
Yeah.
Hilton U. Brown, of course, famously associated with newspapers. Also, his involvement with Butler.
50 years. He was president, or he had some associate. I'm not real clear on the history, but I think it's still the longest standing presidency, maybe, of a major university. It was like 50 years he was the associated with Butler.
It's amazing,
yeah.
His name and his legacy. And then I think one of the most bittersweet stories, his son, and I think he had more than one child, but his son went and fought for America in World War I and was killed in France. And they actually created a small park, which is still standing, in his honor. And that is so bittersweet to me. Right. So as we move forward, we'd obviously like to explore the stories of Hilton U. Brown. I think it'd be interesting to explore the stories of Thomas Carr Howe, the namesake of Howe High School.
And we're just right around the corner from his home. He lived in what is now Irvington Methodist Church. It was his home.
Yeah, his home was this large Tudor
that
was on one of the round circles on Audubon Road. There's a couple of famous round circles. He didn't make a roundabout, but they made a round circle.
Right.
And they're on the north one of Audubon. And I think exploring the life and world of Thomas Carr Howe. And then another aspect, and this is certainly something that Alan Hunter has been heavily involved with, Washington Street, which is and was the National Road, ran right through the heart of Irvington. So that's another historical thing that I'd certainly like to check into and look at and explore on this podcast.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Know, we always said that, you know, missing our, you know, what are the school lunches at all the Irvington schools? So we haven't quite delved into that minutia. But I also think that we helped a tiny bit in helping Howe High School get their message out about how important the school is to the community, because we went through that where we originally had, as part of our initial podcast, the principal
Lloyd Knight.
Right. And then we had a follow-up podcast with Lloyd Knight and also the alumni committee. And the good news is there will still be a Howe High School in Irvington.
Right. And our parent company, RadioForThePeople.com, is talking with Lloyd now about possibly hosting a podcast from Howe where he and teachers can update folks on what's going on and the progress over at that school.
See, that would be great. Yeah. And I think what's kind of cool about Howe High School is we got to do that podcast from their facility. So they actually, kind of in a proactive way, built a little podcast studio.
Sure.
And they're encouraging their students and their alumni groups to stay involved. And that's why I really like podcasting. You know, I'll be the first to say it's like a tree falling in a forest, unless you know. But I do still feel that hyper-local podcasting is a great idea for communities. It really is, because every community has a story to tell.
Right. And I think it's going to be one of those things where it's an educational process. We have to educate folks on what we're trying to accomplish with this podcast so we can get listeners. And I think we've got a lot of folks on the Irvington Facebook page.
Right.
So there's clearly people interested in what's going on in Irvington. We need to make sure that they understand that this podcast is supposed to kind of fill a niche that the other social media don't.
Yeah, and I think the podcast really is really for them. I know that sounds, you know, like maybe a little too altruistic, but I believe that it is true.
But it also, I think what we're finding right now is that there's a lot of former Irvingtonians who want to stay connected. And I think we're actually reaching several of those folks, and they feel an opportunity with the podcast to reconnect with the community that they love. I for years with my Howe website, I kept a gal who was in Hawaii connected to Irvington. She would see stories about that. So I think not only the folks that are still here, but folks that used to be here and want to reconnect to the community. And I'm looking forward to the Halloween festival, because I think we're going to have a really big event. And I think we as Firehouse Irvington are going to be a big part of that. So
it's going to be fun. It's just been a fun thing to be part of this. We do have a number of guests that are coming up on the show that I think you're going to really appreciate as we delve further into Irvington. And if someone wants to contact us and perhaps alert us to a story that we may be missing or direct us, how would they get a hold of us?
Well, they've got several options. One is we just generically info@firehouseirvington.com, or they can email us specifically, jay@firehouseirvington.com or kevin@firehouseirvington.com, and those messages will get to us. And we would love to have suggestions of who we should be interviewing. If you want to offer your home for a live podcast, we'd be happy to come as long as you provide beer or coffee. We're good with that. We're good with that. You know, speaking
Here's
of beer,
our two specified,
we should get Amber over here.
Here's our two specified beverages that we would like.
Yeah, nothing
Either
else
coffee
works.
Or beer.
Water.
Yeah. Oh, no, water. Don't get it near us.
Yeah.
Kevin, if you hit him with water, be like the Wicked Witch of the West, wouldn't he?
I'm melting.
We need to get
yes,
Amber
speaking
over here.
Of beverages, because,
we
of course, we're at the here. Fabulous Black Acre, and this is a building now, that once again shows the resurgence of Irvington.
And, Jay, you know, I mentioned this earlier, but Amber is my gal. You know, when I come in here, I don't even order anymore. I point to Amber, and she gets me. She knows my taste, and she always have it. Amber, you want to say hey?
Well, hello, everyone.
See, she should be on the radio, except that she's too good-looking to be radio. She's really a TV personality that we're co-opting to use for the radio concept.
Well, you know, the MASH 4077, the famous MASH television show, they said that it was the best care anywhere. And if you come in and see Amber at Black Acre, it really will be the best care and service anywhere.
Well, first of all, we're starting with the best beers in the state and maybe in the whole Midwest. But then when you've got folks like Amber and Justin and all these folks that run this place, I mean, this is the place to hang out. And this is noon. We're here at our favorite place around noon.
You guys are just way too sweet. We appreciate you being here today and doing this with us. And it's really fun, and we can't wait to do it again.
Right, and we are going to do this again, right? We're going to have
yes,
a whole
we're
episode
talking,
where we
yeah.
talk with them
we
about...
We want to talk about the owners and the brewers, and we want to talk a little bit about, you know, it's so funny. At first, it was a regional story about brew pubs, but it's become a national story now. And finally, we've restored regional beer flavors to America.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a big part of it.
So
she's happy.
She's
and that's
exact,
good.
Yeah.
And
so anyway,
you know,
when
and
you
the best
come
part
to,
is about Amber really does know the beer here.
Yeah,
she knows
yeah.
what you
and
would
what
like
better
and
name
she can help
for a,
you out.
For a person to help you with your beer than Amber. I mean, she could have been named Porter, but then that would have been a little strange for a woman. But Amber, is that not the best? I mean,
that's
come
the
on.
Perfect name.
You know, that's what I tell everybody when they're like, what's your name? I can never remember your name. And I'm like, just think of Amber, like the beer.
Absolutely.
And everybody goes, oh, right. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So make sure you get in here and ask Amber for a. And if Amber's not here, she's got some of her minions that'll help. But, you know, just if Amber's here, ask her what you want to
you
drink.
You can never get bad service at the Black Acre. It's always a great time here. And Amber, thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for being here.
And we will talk to you and Justin and others in the near future. Absolutely. Cool. Thanks for having
us. Looking forward to it. So, yeah, so many stories here in Irvington, including the Black Acre. It was very nice of them to invite us along on a beautiful Saturday afternoon. We haven't had a lot of beautiful Saturdays here in central Indiana, but we're pleased to have this one. Irvington, a great place to be. In fact, we might have to move our camp outdoors and put a little sun on our faces and enjoy a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me on Firehouse
you.
Irvington. And, of course, this is our letter back to Irvington, which is more of a place. It's like what you just, I'm sorry, I just suddenly flew out of my mind. It's not geography. It's a state of mind.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Irvington, an absolutely amazing place. And we're very happy to be continuing to do Firehouse Irvington. Thank you very so much. Some more great shows on the way, and be kind.